Hey, this is Brandon Crawford from the San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants, with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants! Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is TortureCast.
Welcome, everybody, to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Here, sitting in the orange and black catbird seat, just kidding, I don't have any cats or birds in the house, I have terrible allergies. I am Ben Lee, and with me, of course, is the ever-present, as he reminded us in a text message this morning, Chad King.
Every episode!
Since, like, Katniss. January?
Yay!
Did you just...
Katniss?
Let's just move on from that.
And that other voice that you hear is, of course, Eric Nathanson. Eric, how are you?
I'm good. Apparently, I got to go watch the Hunger Games again.
Now the Toronto Mockingjays versus the. All right. So,
how to start after that.
That's yeah. Just all right. So we're done. We're gonna go ahead and we'll see you next weekend.
See you for episode 93.
Right.
We're on break too. It's the All-Star break. We're kind of on break too. So if we're a little off, you can understand, folks.
We're going to go ahead and call this episode 92ps. So, yeah, we got a couple of things to talk about, though. I mean, obviously, the home run derby was tonight. And the difference between my take on the home run derby and you guys' take on the home run derby is that I didn't get to watch it. So I have no idea what happened other than whatever text messages or messages I got on my phone. So, congratulations, Todd Frazier. That's literally all I've got because I missed all the really awesome bat explosions of the home run derby. I actually really like the home run derby. I've been to two of them, and even though they can really drag on, and I mean, there was one back in like 2011 that you were standing at the end of it going, oh my God, I want to know who wins, but I also just want to go lie down in a bed and this is ridiculous. And you know, obviously this year they had a lot of really major changes and twists to the format. All I was getting were push notes on my phone. So I want to hear from you guys both. Like how'd it feel for you? Did you have a lot more fun this way, or do you miss the old like 3 or 4 hour slow moving extravaganza or what?
No, I loved it.
Well,
it was originally going to be 5 minutes per player with a potential bonus time if you hit a certain distance, I guess. 420 feet? What was it?
It was like two of them of 420 or 425. Yeah, yeah.
425. Yeah. Most of them hit that in their first round or whatever, but I liked it because I think the old version, you know, you could have guys that would take 10, 15, 20 pitches in a row. Potentially,
right.
And it would just go on forever and ever and ever.
And now you could swing at anything because the outs didn't count.
That's right.
And unless you got in the last minute, right?
Exactly. And now, of course, you know, they had a 5 minute limit, but of course, with the weather coming in, which was actually pretty bad in the beginning of the day, it was actually a downpour. MLB came in and said, "Okay, we're going to make it 4 minutes, just because we think that this shit might get rained out." It did not. But I think the four-minute time limit was plenty because most of the guys, even the guys who lost, were getting into the double digits of home runs within those 4 minutes because most of them had the extra 30 seconds. So I thought it was fantastic. I mean, it was way better than in the years past, much faster, and I'm totally for it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I personally have stopped watching the Derby the last few years just because it does drag on so much. It's one of those things that it was a non-event for me because I didn't care. In the grand scheme of things, who cares? I just wasn't being entertained anymore. And why would I watch something if I'm not being entertained?
Well, and when it's purely for entertainment value in the first place.
Right. Last time I was entertained was Josh Hamilton in 08.
Are you not entertained?
Yeah.
Josh Hamilton was in fact doing his best Russell Crowe impression that year. It's true, but
pretty much
that it was phenomenal. This year I loved from start to finish. There was pressure on the guys right off the bat, and they had to figure out how to pace themselves. Like, some guys went off early, and you could totally see it take a toll on them. I thought Albert Pujols was going to fall over. Oh my God, Albert Pujols looked totally gassed at times.
Oh yeah,
but it was also amazing to watch. Jock Peterson specifically, he just impressed the hell out of me. That kid can hit a ball out of any park in any direction at any time, and it kind of scares the crap out of me as a Giants fan.
Yeah, of all the people to be impressed by in that derby, you really hoped that you really hoped that Jock Peterson would go the Matt Kemp route.
Yeah,
he'd come close to it. The poor Cubs guys got knocked out early, but like Peterson put on a show, and Frazier winning it, you know, for the Reds in the hometown, you know, that was a lot of fun. I had a really funny tweet go by my timeline that said, oh, so that's what it would have sounded like had the Reds actually put away the Giants in 2012. And I thought that was hilarious because the crowd got so into it, and it was the first time I'd seen Cincinnati enjoy something because their team sucks in a long time. So it was nice to see the hometown. And I use the quotes hometown kid because he's just the guy who plays in that town to win it all. But like, the crowd really seemed to fuel him, and the timing format was fantastic. We had Pujols win one at the buzzer, and Frazier won it all in his extra 30 seconds. It was on the first swing, but it was really cool with the timing, you know, because you had to figure out and pace it. And Pujols seemed to understand it at one point. He like stepped back, took a breath, knew he had a few, just about 30 seconds left, and then he hit two to win his semifinal, I believe it was, match. And it was fun. It was a show. It was entertainment. And the highlight of the night for me, Chad, I think you watched it too, was Jock Peterson's older brother, Champ, got interviewed. And he has Down syndrome. And I hate to use the word adorable, but it was really cool how, like, right when Pedro Gomez said, I'm here with Jock Peterson's brother, Champ, and Champ immediately leans in and goes, older brother. And you could tell right there that it was a lot of fun. And Champ's favorite player growing up was Albert Pujols, and that's who Jock beat in the semifinals. So it was really, really neat to see. You know, he's like, well, who's your favorite player? He's like, well, it was Pujols, but now it's Jock all the way. Like, it humanized it completely instead of just these, you know, behemoths knocking home runs out of the yard. And you could see the guys get tired. They didn't take 20 pitches, like, you know, you mentioned. They're swinging at pitches in their eyes. They're swinging at pitches down. Jock got inside one that was, like, at his feet, and I don't understand how he hit. I still don't understand how he hit it out. So it made it a lot better. I will tune in again if they do that. And, Chad, that 4 minutes, you were right. It was perfect. It was the right amount of time for them.
Yeah, no, my daughter was watching at that time with Jock's brother, and she actually, you know, she's 9 years old. She doesn't understand Down syndrome and all that. And she was asking about him. Is he okay? You know, like, she wasn't very overt about it. But and I said, well, you know, he has a disease, but he's a very smart guy. And his brother is in the home run derby, and he's cheering him on. And I think it's really cool that he's here tonight, and we all should root for him. And immediately she was like, yay, Jock's brother. I mean, you know, it was really cool to see because he really was into it. So kind of reminded me of I was on Siri is acting up on my phone here. When I was at the game on Friday.
Bad voice assistant. Down.
when I was at the game at AT&T Park on Friday, I was talking to Marty Lurie. And I saw number 22 streaking towards balls shagged out in the outfield. And I was like, wait a minute. 22 is Jake Peavy or Will Clark.
Right.
That's definitely not
Will Clark. Is definitely not streaking around in the outfield.
That's definitely not Will Clark. And I'm like, why would Jake Peavy be streaking after foul balls and fly balls? And I said, you know, hey, Marty, that's not Jake Peavy out there, right? I mean, he's way too small. And he said, oh, no, that's Will Clark's son. And, of course, he was the reason that Will retired earlier than he probably could have. You know, we all know that his last season with the Cardinals, he was hitting over 300. He probably had at least two or three seasons left in him, but of course he retired to take care of his autistic son. And now his autistic son is, of course, high school age, and he is out there just a physical monstrosity tracking down every single line drive, fly ball, blooper, whatever you call it. I mean, he was full out diving, crashing into the wall, jumping. I mean, it was actually pretty amazing considering the kid is apparently no older than 16, and he was out there. So,
wow.
Kudos to him. Kudos to Will Clark. It was a lot of fun to watch his son out there. But at the same time, my daughter did recognize that, you know, look, not everyone is born with what we all are blessed with. And to see someone maybe with a less, a smaller toolbox still be out there doing what they can do is really inspiring. And my daughter was totally into it.
Right on.
I thought it made it fun. It's funny, you bring up Friday, and I guess we can purposely segue into the most recent Giants games. And
yeah, because we finally get to talk about a couple of wins again, right? Yeah. So,
right.
We haven't gotten to do that a whole lot in a while.
Yeah, beat up on the small kids. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah, you know, well, in sports, that's considered okay because okay. You need a win where you can find
it. It's not bullying.
Yeah, right. I mean, oh man, yeah, it's Phillying, sadly. Yeah. Oh man, yeah, that's we really
they did it to Cole Hamels though. It wasn't like
oh yeah,
well it's that true. that was amazing. I mean, you know, Willie and I attended the game, and it was, you know, it was supposed to be Mad Bum Hamels. Hamels actually had a better ERA going into that game than Bum did.
Until the game happened.
Yeah, and he plays for the Phillies until the game happened. Exactly. And it was a really fun inning. I think it was the fourth inning. Crawford started out with the out. And then the next eight Giants scored. And then Crawford got the second out.
Missed the ground out.
And it was, yeah, he
it was just, it was a rough day to be Brandon Crawford.
No, it happens.
Really.
It's all good. He's an all-star. He knew it. It's all good. You know, I talked to him about it before the game. He is he's good with his masculinity. He's okay.
He's,
no problems.
He's not worried about it.
No, not so
well.
Much.
It's. I was gonna say, you know, Chad, you're to blame because you interviewed him that day, but Duffy went out and did the exact opposite.
Well,
so,
I was gonna say,
you know,
but I had also interviewed Duffy, and he had a great game.
And he went what, like four for six or something?
He was 4 for 5.
4 for 5.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
So overall. It was Giants I interviewed were 4 for 9.
Yes.
So that's okay. Sure.
I mean, it
not so bad.
Yeah, it's just, you know, Crawford next time just needs to tell Duffy to not be such a hog, right?
Pretty much.
Hey, leave some luck for the rest of us, would you?
Yeah. Well, you know, I asked Duffy about that, but I was in the clubhouse, and of course, we had a little bit of an issue when I checked in. So this year we are given clubhouse access whenever we get our passes. When I checked in, I opened up the envelope, and it was a blue pass. Now, blue passes do not allow you to go in the clubhouse. That's the one level up, basically. You know, there's two levels, basically.
So it's a can you or can't you, and it was a can't you and not a can you.
It was a can't you, and I was like, what do I do? So I had questions prepared. I was there very early. I took time off of work. So I was a little frustrated, but I did go down and talk to the security guard who was in front of the clubhouse, and I said, hey, you know, no big deal. Normally we have the orange pass is, I won't use his name, here today. And he said, well, no, I think he's off, but let me help you out. So another Giants employee came out and said, can I help you? And I said, yes, this is what we usually have. Oh, no problem. I'll call up. Can you go to this person's office? Yeah, no problem. Went up there. As I walked into this person's office, the pass was being written, handwritten for me. And so I just want to give a shout out to the Giants press relations and, you know, PR staff. You really took good care of the TorchCast this weekend, and no questions asked. And I was able to go into the dugout, but of course, or the clubhouse, I should say. And of course, what do I do first? I look over at Ryan Vogelson, and I said, oh, well, I should totally go ask him a question. So, he said,
death
no.
stare coming back.
Yeah. Peers through my soul and says, I'm starting tomorrow. I was like, oh, right.
Turn around and other way.
Yeah.
Yeah, we forget sometimes that Vogie's right after Bum in the order right now.
Well, exactly. And I just, it was a total brain fart, rookie mistake. You know, I don't blame it on anyone. I don't get mad at him, but because we all know that's the way he is.
Yeah. You know? No, that's a long-standing, yeah, like
he's been like that for years, right?
You done so. Goofed, but it's I done not. Goofed. I done it's, goofed. It wasn't aimed at you. It was just no, you were all. The one that goofed. So,
and in my interview with Duffy, he, you know, I asked him about that, and he said, "Hey, don't take it personally. That's just, you know, he's the only guy in the entire clubhouse who basically needs that extra day for whatever reason to get ready for his start." So he's like, "Yeah, don't take it personally." And I was like, "No, no, I don't. But at the same time,
I also panicked because, you know, for a minute there, I had a feeling that I was going to spontaneously explode on the spot.
I've never had a Major League Baseball player stare at me in that fashion. And it was very uncomfortable.
They're very physically imposing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean,
let's
he
be
was
honest,
sitting
that's
in his
why
chair,
he
too, by the way. He was, I, it does, I was actually standing
matter.
Over him. But
you
it
know, it
matter.
Doesn't matter.
No, it didn't matter.
Well, that's why he didn't get out of the sixth. I mean, come on.
Yeah, you.
Oh yeah, clearly. Yeah, I wanted to tweet him directly and his
it's
wife.
It's Chad's fault for so everything.
I'm all so right. sorry I talked to you on Friday. You would have gotten through six.
Now, with that said, you know, we were just mentioning though that it was pretty astounding that we did what we did against Cole Hamels of all people, who is. Other than that day, looking like a legitimate candidate for best pitcher available on the trade market, likely to move.
Well, I think he went from like a 3.02 or 3 to a 3.62 or 3. I mean,
that's hilarious,
yeah,
by the way.
Boom, because the Giants, of course, as we said, scored 8 straight runs in between Crawford outs.
Yeah, I will gladly start giggling about that one. With that said, anyway. There were a couple of really fun milestones. I mean, you kind of have to go with the Pence Grand Slam as the big one, because for so many reasons, you know, poetic justice and so on and so on. What was your favorite of all the, like, because that game had a bunch of moments in and of itself, I feel like. What was probably your favorite moment out of all the different, like, oh, there might be hope again things we saw in that game?
Yeah, you know, I was sitting there in the score was 10-2, I think in the sixth or seventh.
Mm-hmm.
And after the Phillies got a couple of runners on, I'm actually thinking, oh my God, they might lose this game. That's kind of where Giants fans were at that point, because, you know, they had lost, what, 8 out of 9 at that point.
Right.
And there's just that sense of like, well, here it comes again.
Yeah. I mean, you know, seventh inning. Up 10-2, thinking, oh, wait, we need more insurance runs. We need that double play. What's going on here?
well,
we needed the sweep.
Machi was on
pretty
the
much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. They did need a sweep. They were 11 for 21 with runners in scoring position that night.
11 for 21, huh?
Yeah. That's crazy.
They were 22. For 45 overall, 489 batting average. Not so bad.
They left 10 men on base, the same amount that the Phillies left on base.
Isn't that crazy? They set their high for hits and runs that night. So, and at AT&T Park, where they've been struggling.
Not just the hits wasn't just AT&T. The hits is since 1958 when they moved there. That was an all-time San Francisco record.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That was just amazing. You know, I said it back in June when they went out on the road. I said, you know what cures a June swoon? The Phillies. And it did. And you know what cured a July swoon? The Phillies. They stink. They're the worst team, and the Giants did exactly what they're supposed to do against a team like that. If we're to believe that the Giants are a good team and they're playoff worthy, that's what you have to do against teams like that. I mean, not necessarily 15-2. But that's what you have to do against teams like that. I honestly, as much fun and Friday was fun, Saturday was really the most impressive win of the series.
Because
they fell behind 4-1, and then they ripped off 5 runs in the bottom of the sixth to immediately come back and take the lead. And then they tacked 2 more on in the seventh to kind of put it away and be like, okay, we got this.
Yeah.
Until Romo came in. But
you know, it's just frustrating that they were 30-20. At some point in the season, 10 games above 500, And to think that they're 4.5 games back of the Dodgers now after a sweep of the Phillies, you know, losing 8 in a row is rough. And, you know, they could easily be in first place or tied or a game back or whatever it is. And they're well within striking distance, but it's these little losing streaks because they've lost in three separate losing streaks. They've lost 8, 8, and 5 in a row, right? And it's rough. That accounts to almost half of their losses for the year. They're a very streaky team, and they need to get a little more consistent. I think that's their big issue right now.
Well, it's funny. When you look back at last year, they were a streaky team last year, too.
Yeah, it was really the worst when we hit that, like, massive dip in the sort of towards the middle of the year and went and so, you know, it was the streaks were a little bit broader in a way, like they weren't this specific with like, well, 7 games in a row, whoops.
Yeah,
that's true.
But at the same time, you know, it's true, this is not really ever a team that has shown a season-long consistency. In like, I mean, 2012 might have been sort of an exception, but like, there's a lot of like, it just, you know, it, either there, nobody really ever has the whole team firing consistently throughout the season, but with the Giants, it always feels kind of pronouncedly like, whoops, well, this is an off week.
Well, the thing I noticed the other day, because I follow a lot of Cubs people now, because the Cubs are actually good again, and it's nice to, you know, check in with my hometown. And one of the Cubs bloggers was like, I don't understand why the Giants scare people sometimes. And then they go out and do things like score 15 runs against the Phillies, and then the next day come back and do those things. And it's like, that's why they're scary, is because when they click, they all click.
Yeah.
But if they don't, they just fall flat on their face. You know, it's the old adage that Bochy says, keep the line moving.
No one wants to face the Giants in the playoffs, plain and simple, no matter how good or bad they are going in. I mean, you know, they're, what, 9-0 in those series. It's just – it's academic at this point.
Yeah, that's – I mean, well, you know, let's take a look at it, because now that we've done that, we've swept the Phils, we're at 3 games above 500 for the year again. So we're pushing in the right direction, although, you know, it's the Phillies, and it's hard to know how much of that's going to stick around. But hey, we're pushing in the right direction, and we've ended the first half on a pretty good note, considering that, honestly, we have not had one day this whole season with our projected or planned opening day roster. Like, somebody's been hurt pretty much consistently the entire time, whether it's Matt Cain or whether it's Hunter Pence, whether it's Nori Aoki. Somebody's been hurt the entire time that we've gotten through the season, and we're 3 games above 500, and we're, what, 4.5 games back?
Yeah, 4.5 and 2 in the wild card.
And 2 games back in the wild card. And that's without, you know, it's not even firing on all cylinders. That's having all the cylinders to fire on. So, I mean, yeah,
there's not a selling team.
Not even close. And whether or not we're going to buy anybody is certainly a question to ask later on. But right now, it's kind of nice to sit back and go, okay, you know what? Things can only get better from here, right? Which I'm going to knock on some wood real quick, because I got like 30 pieces of it lying around here.
Yeah, I know.
Hold on, I think I found almost all of the wood that's next to my chair here. Okay, so with that said, though, we got a manager just wreaking havoc in Cincinnati right now, just, you know, rolling around and taking names and making Bochy noises and saying, well, you know, I was considering trying to go ahead and start a.
I like Zach Greinke.
Yeah. I was thinking that I might go ahead and start Trouty in the lineup, and then remembered he's on the other team. But yeah, it's kind of fun just get these little stories that are creeping out about Bochy and the others being at the All-Star game. I think one of my favorites was one that a guy with a camera at the media day for the All-Star game goes up to Buster Posey and says, "So Posey, How's your brother Jeff doing? And Posey goes, I don't have a brother Jeff. And I was like, wait, what? How are you doing your research?
Yeah.
Like,
who gave you your media pass? Seriously.
Yeah, really?
That guy dropped the ball. Who are you and how did you get here? If you had a brother named Jeff, how would he be doing?
He totally dropped the ball.
I saw that, yeah, and that was an amazing response, and I was upset nobody used it.
That would have been fantastic.
My other favorite one that I've seen so far is that I went ahead and I had to talk to Bum before the game. He told me that he either wanted to start or he wanted to close. I'm not sure how serious he was. Like, I thought that was awesome. Just Bumgarner's like, yeah, I want to start or I want to close.
Yeah.
Like, well, you can't start. So. Yeah.
No. You know,
this is awkward. So I'm pretty sure it wasn't. Obviously, it wasn't serious. No, anything you throw at Bochy is going to be pretty funny. So it was fine.
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead, Derek.
It's kind of serious because Bumgarner, in a sense, he won't pitch if they're behind then. And it's a way to save his arm.
Yeah.
I mean, is that wrong? I mean, I don't mind if they save his arm. I also don't mind a Posey.
It's hard for me to imagine it being that serious, so to speak. Like, yeah, this is exactly why I meant to say it. Like, I want to either start or close. I just don't want to. I don't want to pitch when we're behind. I don't need to. I'm like, it seems like the kind of thing you'd say when your manager is trying to come up with all-star game lineup decisions, and you're like, "Well, start me or close me." Like, but dude, I can't wait. What?
Yeah. No. I mean, there's no scenario in the world where the National League is down by a couple of runs in the fifth, sixth, seventh inning that Bumgarner enters the game. It's not going to happen. He's only going to be, you know, put in the game in a hold or save situation, just like last year. That's what it is. I mean, and if I did see some Giants fans, I mean, a few, granted, minority, fringe, bandwagon, whatever you want to call them, who were somewhat upset that Bumgarner's not starting the All-Star game. And those are the people you have to just talk to very gently. You know, and just, you know, go like,
look, sometimes, like, even though your team is very
like
good,
children go
there
like,
are other teams that are
you
better.
Love Bumgarner. Let's say this. We love Bumgarner. Bum is good. Bum is the MVP of the World Series. Bum is great. He is not
now
the
you're getting
starter
creepy.
Of the all-starter. Or,
I'm just
all-star
I'm just
game.
Saying that was kind of creepy.
I'm sorry.
At the end there. I'll get over it after I go rock in the corner for a bit. But hey, Bumgarner is not last year's Bumgarner exactly, but he's still a damn good Bumgarner.
Yeah,
he's
no,
just
not,
not
at this point. I mean,
like,
he's an all-star, but he's definitely
right.
not a starter. I mean,
right.
Zach Greinke starting is a perfect choice. I don't care if he's
Greinke and Scherzer have been out of this world this year.
They've been fantastic.
Yeah. Had to be one of those two,
you know,
for sure.
And then Bochy selecting Kershaw as the replacement for Scherzer, which, you know, granted, he probably should have been on the team before that, is a fantastic choice. So for those Giants fans who really do think that Bumgarner should be starting, just chill out. It's okay. Do you really want him to start? No, probably
not. In your heart, you're not wrong. Just in your head.
Yes, just in your head. And you know what? Bum is fine with that too. It's all good.
It's true.
I'm okay with Greinke. Greinke was the perfect choice.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Well, and I think it's pretty likely, too, that we see – I think it's kind of neat that you may end up seeing Crawford and Panic play together at some point now that – what is it, LeMahieu, I think, moved up to starter?
Yeah, DJ LeMahieu. And that's what I actually asked Crawford in my interview with him on Friday night. I said, do you think Boch will put you and Panic in at the same time? And he said, oh, my God, that would be fantastic. I would love to turn a double play with him.
In the All-Star game.
Yeah.
That'd be outstanding.
We were
Did
all
you see the
that, but he said it. So
the talk at one point that after it was it D. Gordon that got hurt, I want to say?
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody was like, well, everybody just looks at Matt Duffy.
Yeah.
Like, Boch was ribbing him. Because, I mean, in fairness, Duffy's had a year that you could loosely say is All-Star worthy.
Yeah. I wanted to talk to him about that, but I completely avoided it because there was no point to do so.
Yeah, it feels almost like a snub if you bring it up, even though it's not. And I think Duffy would be the last person to think of it as a snub per se, but it's weird to bring it up.
Well, no, you look at Duffy's stats versus Panic stats. I mean, they're absolutely comparable. But the fact is that Duffy is at third base and Panic's at second. So, and he was brought up as a shortstop slash second baseman. Those were his two primary positions. He just is now in a power position. He's just, you know, going into, I did want to ask him this, you know, into the next couple of years, would you think that you would have a better shot at making the All-Star team at short or second rather than third base? And I think most people would absolutely say yes, but at the same time, for the Giants, you got Panic and Crawford there. So what are you going
to
do?
Yeah, you're not moving to second or third or short.
You're not. So. Exactly. It's a power position, and he's not a power hitter. I mean, he's done great. He's better than
Yeah, but Sandoval the competition at third is, but, yeah.
Yeah, it's a crowded elevator. So
true.
It's funny. You're bringing up Duffy, and I want to pose this question to you guys. Kasem McGee signed with Florida, with Miami. A few days ago, and it was during the Giants off day between the Mets series, which was a rough series. It was a tough series. The Mets played good in that series, but McGee signed Thursday with Miami, and then Duffy went on a tear Friday, Saturday, Sunday. After that happened, do you think that he relaxed more knowing that he didn't put some guy out of a job anymore, knowing that he hadn't driven somebody out of baseball?
I think we get your point, dude. But yeah, unfortunately, your internet is borking out there.
It was holding out really well up until just now.
Yeah.
Yep. We just lost Eric.
And all right. There he goes.
It's all right. I'll try and – well, it's going to try and auto-reconnect him. But as far as answering that goes, it's a pretty valid question, I think. You know, it's like does the pressure change when the guy whose job you took isn't still in the clubhouse when you're as nice as Matt Duffy? Because obviously, you know, Matt Duffy is one of the really nice guys in the clubhouse for sure. Yeah. And even though, you know, I think – There's a limit to nice in the clubhouse because you're going out there and you're playing baseball and you're doing your job and all that. You know, obviously, I don't see Duffy as the type to let that influence his play too much. But at the same time, I could totally understand that, you know, you're going to play with a little more ease when the guy whose job you took isn't, like, sitting on the bench going, boy, I sure wish that was me. Maybe if I would stop hitting into double plays.
Good job, like, Eeyore.
Yeah, thanks. I do what I can. Sort of, I guess. But yeah, it's I don't know. It's what do you think? Do you think that's actually enough to make a big change? Do you think it was just facing the Phillies is what did it for Duffy? Or
no, absolutely not. I mean, I do think that the Phillies had an effect on his performance, but at the same time, had nothing to do with his psychology. I think it was just the level of play. He's hitting, what, 298, 299 right now after the Philly series, and he had seven or eight hits during the three-game series. He was absolutely fantastic. But I do think, because I did talk to him about slump busters, and, look, you only get to the level of Major League Baseball with knowing how to handle slumps.
Right.
No matter who you are, even if you hit 220, 300, 400, whatever it is, you know how to handle slumps over most other players. And I asked him about that, and he said, yeah, it's tough, but he absolutely agreed that is a separator between major leaguers and minor leaguers, because he thinks that the only difference between minor league pitching, you know, he was in the Eastern League, by the way, which is a tough hitters league.
Right. The Eastern League has always been more of a pitcher's league.
It's a pitcher's league. And, you know, and he was hitting 326 or whatever it was. He was doing very, very well there. He was at the top of the, you know, top of the league. You know, most guys are hitting under 300 there.
Right.
I said, you know, so, and he's hitting 298 right now. So he's basically, you know, equivalent. Actually, he's hitting a little bit less than what he did in the Eastern League, but most guys are hitting where he is hitting now. And he said, you know, the main difference between the two leagues are that if you have an 0-2 count, a pitcher will throw a changeup or curve or off-speed pitch. It'll just be a couple of inches below the zone, something that's hittable, but a ball. While, as in the Eastern League, it would be in the dirt. So he said, that's the difference. Balls look like strikes longer. Strikes look like balls longer. Those are his exact words. And
the pitches are just more deceptive. Yeah.
As a former player, I could totally agree with that. Not that I've seen those pitches. I'm just saying that,
right,
you know, something that's clearly diving into the dirt, you can give up on fairly quickly. Something that is only going to be a couple inches below the zone, because these pitchers can actually throw to that spot.
You got to freeze up and you kind of panic a little bit. And
exactly.
Yeah. For those that can hear the Boston's whistle going off in behind Chad there, we're hearing from Eric that Eric's having some trouble with Wi-Fi, so we may not be hearing from Eric again tonight, which is a damn shame.
Yeah, that's fine.
But we will soldier on, and continue talking about baseball
stuff
because we like baseball. Speaking of which, I did want to point out, just because I thought it was sort of neat, and we'll just touch on this briefly and then move on to our big question. But Casey McGee, he's back in Florida. His first hit was a double with a two RBIs, I believe. I think it was an RBI double or a two RBI double.
Of course, because why would he ground into a double play?
Well, I mean, he has hit into a double play there, but he's actually hitting 4-for-10 so far with one double play.
Yeah.
So perhaps that was the
we would take the key. That, by the way, but
yeah, right. But we didn't get it. So, in fairness, I mean, there is something to be said for the change of scenery, and also for the small sample size. You put those two things together, you get a small change of scenery sample size, and that's exactly what we've got here.
Yep.
So I guess we'll see how things pan out. If McGee suddenly turns around and starts hitting into double plays all over the place, fine. And if it turns out that he would have probably done nothing but that here and just needed to go back to Florida, well, okay. Good for him then.
Yeah,
you know.
Good for him. I mean, he's a, you know, Santa Cruz boy. He loves the Giants, but...
Sure. But there wasn't traction here. And I mean, if there's not going to be traction here, but you can latch on somewhere else and stay a major league hitter and player, okay,
we'd all do the same thing.
Yeah, and I certainly would not fall in the ranks of, gee, I hope that, you know, McGee gets like left in the minors, or it's like, no, he can definitely do something a little better than that. So I mean, it just, what can you do? I'm hoping that he does well from here. I'm just hoping he doesn't do well enough to have the Marlins like knock us out of the wild card or anything like that. Well, so I have limits on how much I want McGee to succeed from here, enough to not screw us. And beyond that,
we're done with them. So,
we got an Eric back.
Eric,
yeah,
excellent.
Eric is back.
Phew, that was close.
Speaking of the Marlins,
I make no promise.
Yep.
Promises. This is not consistent.
Yep. The Giants are done with the Marlins, by the way. So apparently that's a good thing.
What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, except when they play us at home, apparently.
Yeah, McGee can't do anything to the Giants the rest of
not
the way.
Directly, but not we directly. Will see.
Well, no,
we will
not
see.
Directly. No.
Now, as far as our playoff hopes, actually, let's go ahead and let's launch right into our big question. You can't see it, but I'm waving my hand in front of my mouth to make reverberations.
Yes.
So speaking of which, Eric actually tossed out a really good big question here. Can the Giants catch the Dodgers in the second half? Or are they playing for the wild card right now? And I mean, I look at this question and my first reaction is, ¿por qué no los dos? Of course. But, you know, I think that that's... I think it's a really good question. I think it's maybe something you determine after the first month has passed and when you're getting into August and September. Yeah. But I think it's a really good question, because does it matter? You know, like literally it matters now, because the wild card does not simply mean congrats, you're in the playoffs. It's have a one game playoff.
Huge.
And hope for another Brandon Crawford grand slam shrug.
Yeah.
But is it is that what we're kind of what we're doing here? Like, do you think that we start buying and selling based on trying to win the division?
No, they're 4.5, you know, back of the division and 2 back of the wild card. So that difference is 2.5 games.
It's negligible. It's true.
It's exactly 2.5 games. I mean, no, of course not.
So you aim for the, I think, especially because when you look at the rest of the standings, right now at least, maybe San Diego is close, and otherwise that it's a 2-3 horse race in this division. I mean, right now it's a 1-horse race, frankly, but it's a 2-3 horse race in this division. So you look at that and you go, yeah, I mean, we managed to make it back from 6.5 back up to 4.5. And you get a couple of guys healthy, you get a couple of them rested after the All-Star break, you put a few things together. It's true for the other teams too, but maybe that's all we need. And you kind of need to give it a little time to pan out.
This team was only a game and a half back, like just a little over 2 weeks ago. Towards the end of July, before they hit this stupid skid in Miami and Washington, they were a game back heading into that road trip. Yeah. So it's entirely possible they can make up that ground. You guys know me. I'm going to say yes, they can win the division because, you know, I picked them to win the division. But
consistency. The other thing we like that around here
is – well, I'm not going to give up on it. The Dodgers don't play well against good teams. And that actually, again, goes back to part of why I picked the Giants to win the division is I don't think the Dodgers can sustain success. I mean, they went 2-5 against the Cardinals. They're already done with the Cardinals. They're 3-9 against our boys. The only teams that they have winning records against are like Arizona and San Diego and Colorado, which is a shame because the Giants can't beat any of those guys right now.
So literally, we're going to suddenly collapse, and the Diamondbacks are going to race back up to the top of the standings.
You know, they beat up on Philly.
No.
Well, they're the only ones. I think San Diego is a seller. I do think it's a total 2-horse race. The thing with the wild card that scares me is I'm not sure that if they don't win the division that they can even make the wild card. You've got the Mets, the Cubs, and the Pirates, and possibly the Cardinals if they fall back to earth, all fighting for that.
Yes.
Yeah, and none of those teams are going to roll over. That's for darn sure. So, I mean, you know, the Cubs certainly don't look like they're shaping up for a Cubs implosion. They're really developing a pretty strong core. Pirates really kind of were lackluster to start the year and really have picked it up. I mean, there's lots and lots of different arcs and stories going on. This wild card could shape up to be pretty tight, and nobody's really reaching out to grab it just yet.
Yeah, then the Pirates again, are the only ones running out with it, and they're really good right now, the Pirates.
True. Then again, we were really good for about a month straight in June, so you never know.
Well, the funny thing is the Giants are going to play the Cubs. The Giants are going to play the Cubs like 6 or 7 times, and they're going to turn into important games the rest of the way. They haven't played Chicago yet. The Mets we just finished with went 3-3 against them, took 2 in their house. They took 2. That's what was frustrating the other day, last week.
Giving up 2 to the Mets at home, yeah.
Yes, that was really, really frustrating because it's all well and good that they beat up on the Phillies, but they have to win series against teams like the Mets. They really have to win those.
And it's got to be the ones that you're going to be in contention with: Mets, Cards, Cubs, Pirates. Yeah, absolutely.
Have we faced the Buccos yet? To their advantage. We're 0-3 against Pittsburgh so far. That was in Pittsburgh.
Right.
Wait, no, that was it. No, that was no, in. That was nope. That was at home.
Yeah,
that was at home.
Yeah, they haven't been to PNC yet.
But, I mean, the sheer fact that they have, you know, not so good records, I think they just recently evened up their record against the Padres. If they can beat up on the rest of the division and continue their dominance over the Dodgers, it gives them a total opportunity to catch them and win the division.
I mean, it's true. I mean, the fact that we've been as good against our primary rival as we are is not bad. It'd be nice if we were, you know, better against the rest of the division, but still... it's always a good sign when you're doing well against your primary rival, because if they're the ones that we're going to be racing against to try and get out of the division, well, I'd rather have a really good record against them. I'm all right with that.
Yeah.
So now with that said, as far as how we get there, that's the question. So let's actually say as far as how we get there, you know, pitching has always been something that carries this team, although I think it's different this year in a lot of ways. But Eric, you had a really good question here, too. What is the rotation after the break? Since it looks like Hudson's probably going to be coming back at some point soon. Definitely just needed some resting time. No idea what we're going to be doing with Lincecum yet, but after the break with Hudson coming back, what do you do? I mean, we've got five guys that have all been somewhere between serviceable and don't. And, you know, I mean, out of those, you got a couple that are definitely untouchable. Bumgarner, probably Heston. Sure. Yep. I would say Heston's pretty untouchable right now. Even Kane. Yeah. Kane has looked anywhere from adequate to decent, and he's only had a couple of starts. So you kind of assume that he's going to get warmed back up to being on a major league mound, even though he's had plenty of time to do some pitching. He's probably going to get at least a little bit better. Knock on more wood, still surrounded by shelves and bed frames I haven't put away. All right. That's gave people way too much insight into what my room looks like. But, you know, Kane is presumably going to get better. So that
Ben
pretty much
lives
leaves.
In a cabin in the woods.
I do not, although that movie was decent. So it looks like it's kind of down to like Vogelsong or Peavy. And both have had good outings and bad outings lately. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Vogelsong and Timmy to the pen.
Vogelsong and Timmy to the pen. We've been talking about this for like a month now. Even when we started thinking that Kane and Peavy were coming back, we said, you know, it's probably going to be Vogie and Timmy to the pen. I could see that. They're the only two in the entire rotation right now. Well, no, Heston a little bit, but otherwise they're the only two that have significant experience coming out of the pen, unless you count Bumgarner in Game 7, but I don't really count that, even though it was amazing. It's amazing on its own merits, not as Bumgarner as a bullpen no. candidate. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'm with that. What do you think, Eric? Uh-oh.
Well, I'm not going to take a mea culpa on PV just yet, because it's only been a couple starts with PV staying in the rotation right now. He is finishing off batters. He's finishing off innings in a way he was not doing at the beginning of the season. And it's good to see. And he was, you know, getting all this time off might be the thing for him. Kane, again, and also, apparently people were like whining about Kane after his first start back, which is just, I think, I like Bumgarner and Heston at the top. Vogie's got to go to the pen, but I think it's a fluid situation regardless, because who knows how much longer, you know, Hudson with his old manitis is going to be able to handle it. If PV falters a little bit, will they throw him on the DL? The problem is they're going to have to figure out who to either DFA or send down or whatnot to make room for all these guys. You know, when Timmy comes back as well, I know he's going to the bullpen, but in essence, there's seven starting pitchers for five slots. And by putting Vogie and Timmy in the pen, you yank two more guys out of the pen that, you know, are part of the team right now. And that's not even thinking about the fact that Jeremy Affeldt's going to come back in a week or so.
True.
That's true. It's the thing that really sucks now is it's like every so often when your internet clicks out, we'll lose a little bit and then you'll say something really insightful and then we'll lose half of it. And then it'll pop back in, and it'll be really insightful. and I'm just sitting here like, yeah, I get what you're getting at. I don't know how yet, but what I can hear is coming out is really good. And I agree. I think that it's not a set situation in stone right now. Like, you can't look at this rotation as it is this instant and say, well, that's it. But at the same time, like, Hudson's a clock. And Hudson is the kind of clock that you look at and say, is Hudson going to make us better? That is a debatable answer right now. Hard to say. The rest probably is doing him a huge amount of good, I would imagine. But is Hudson going to do us good now? Is Hudson going to do us more good than Ryan or Jake? Is Hudson going to do us more good in those spots? And if so, you're right. The roster is going to be a huge concern. Because if you decide that, I mean, regardless, you're bringing back Hudson. Hudson is coming back up to the bigs. You're not going to find a way to have Absolutely. Him toil around in rehab, although you might for like a start or two. Which is going to be great for Sacramento. Have fun, Rayleigh Field. But you're eventually going to bring him back up. And the question becomes, what do you do with everybody? Because someone has to go back down.
Right.
And you the options on the table right now, as far as options, well, it's pretty much just Chris Heston in the rotation. And there's nothing good right now about sending down Chris Heston. Like, no good can come of that.
No.
And sending down Josh Osich doesn't save anything unless you push one of the starters into the bullpen, because we've needed Osich bad. With Affelt out, we've needed Osich real bad. And he's been good.
I gotta say, even if Affelt comes back, I do not mind Osich staying in that bullpen.
Yeah,
I would not mind seeing Machi disappear.
Affelt coming back is and Machi's, quite frankly, like, sort of bell ringing. Like, it's like, no, no.
I think Petit's gonna be gone.
Maybe. I mean, Petit has not seen a lot of. He hasn't seen a lot of use lately, but he's still one of our better long relief options right now. Although, if you move Vogie and Tim to the pen, or if you think at least one of them is going, you have a long relief option. So let's put that out there.
Yeah, that's exactly why I think Petit's in danger of losing his spot. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see, and I know this is totally out of the blue, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see Romo or something take a DL stint or something like that.
Yeah,
he's been. I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah,
his slider is so flat right now. He either totally fools you or he throws the fattest pitch of the day.
Still over a 5 ERA. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even when it looks like he's been improving, there's moments. But I don't know. It's tough because that core four that's done so much for us is also about 5 years older now than when they were originally sort of our core four in the bullpen. Exactly. And it stinks, you know. It's not like they all still have plenty of, not necessarily upside, but usage. They all have utility still.
Yep.
But it's changed, and you have to have some things to supplement them. And right now you see the Giants rolling through a few options. Osich is one. Mike Broadway is another. Hunter Strickland is definitely getting some airtime right now. And George Kontos is he's not getting any younger, but there's no downtick. He's only gotten better in the last like 3 years we've seen George Kontos. Kontos has turned into the anchor of that bullpen in a way that none of the core four have sort of reached up to take this year, maybe except Javi Lopez. So
Kontos has the best strikeout to walk ratio anybody in the bullpen at 5.2.
And even
he's stranded all 25 guys he's inherited. Nobody else in baseball can claim that. I mean, that's just ridiculous to me. I didn't think Kontos was going to be like this. I actually thought he was going to end up being. You remember at the beginning of the season, we're talking about Kontos or Machi. Kontos ran with this. He is their number one guy right now.
Kontos latched on with like both hands and teeth and was like, nope, I'm staying. And I mean, to the point that Bochy has to, like, people ask Bochy when Kontos is getting a break. He was getting used so consistently and deserving that consistent usage. Yeah. So, and Machi, on the other hand, like, I sort of, in my head, if I had looked at how the year was going to go, I might have flipped where Machi and Kontos are right now based on their performance the last couple of years. Machi was never the one to inspire the most confidence, but he was consistently decent all through last year in a way that Kontos was not. And so I said, going into this, because you always base your assumptions on the year before, even though you know inevitably you're going to be wrong about 75% of them. You know, you say, okay, well, bullpen's going to be pretty solid. Machi's probably going to be pretty solid. Kontos is going to be one of those fringe guys. And all of a sudden we're looking at Machi and going, your time might be up, mate. And so baseball's a funny sport, you guys.
Baseball,
man. Okay. Baseball.
So, I mean, it's we talked about it. It's going to be fluid. We know Vogie. It's got to be Vogie because there's no way Heston's going to get bumped back.
No,
I mean,
you
look at his numbers. You can't do it. The thing that impresses me most about Heston is he continually gets the ground balls. Mm-hmm. He is somebody who has obviously learned over the years. Exactly. He's learned over the years. I think, I don't know, maybe it was you, Chad, or something that tweeted it the other day. He went from like ninth in baseball to third in baseball in double play balls, or maybe I'm imagining it. I know he did that on Sunday, just, you know, within those first few innings, because he had like four. There was in the first four innings, he had three ground ball double plays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he gets the ground ball. It's really impressive.
Any time that you can get one pitcher that's going to turn an entire team into 2014 Casey McGee, you've got something pretty solid. Also, I'm sorry, Casey. Anyway, but yeah, Heston has been just so consistently, like, he's not, I can't say so consistently on. He's definitely had a couple of off games. But for the most part, Heston has recovered well. And even though we don't always give him credit for it because he is kind of the new kid in the rotation, Heston has a lot of experience under his belt, and you're seeing a lot of that play out. He's pitching more like a pitcher and less like a thrower, as opposed to a lot of the younger guys we'll see come up. And I think that in Heston's case, I think that ended up helping him immensely. And I think we don't give enough credit to the Giants org and to some of the work that they've really done developing pitchers over the years, because we see a lot of these fireballers come up when they're young and when they're just like Tim Lincecum rubber band, you know, slingshotting heat from the mound. And Heston is somebody that came up really who had a lot of ability, but now sort of shows a harness to it that it's hard to, like, without having seen him when he was younger, it's hard to know if he already had some of that natural inclination. But he's really just like taken his tools and said, this is how you use them, and sort of really refined a lot of what seems like his approach. So, man, he's fun to watch too. You know, like no hitter aside, Heston is just Heston's fun to watch. So
you never feel like he's overwhelmed. Yeah, you never feel.
No, Heston is just like Ice Cube, not just like Ice Cube.
How do you know? I mean, maybe he lived. There's your podcast Poison title. The Hood at one point. Who the hell knows?
There's your podcast title, just like Ice Cube. All right. So let's talk some favorite guys. Chad, I think you've got probably one of the most obvious and still most appropriate choices here. So who have you got for a favorite guy?
Juliet Lewis? No. Brandon. Sorry.
Woody Harrelson. Oh wait, not natural.
Matthew McConaughey.
That was horrible. All right. No, Brandon Crawford. I mean, we've loved this guy from the beginning. We never thought that maybe he wasn't an all-star at all all-star breaks, but this year he has topped all years. 12 home runs, hitting .262. He's been fantastic. And the fact of the matter is he was voted in by his peers. This is not a
This is not the Giants suddenly leaping up and getting, like, just exhorting fans to vote. Correct. This is his peers.
This is not a scooter fan stuffing the ballot.
This is not Freddie Sanchez almost making the All-Star ballot when injured.
Yeah,
right.
This is not Bochy selecting him. Not that that's a bad thing, but the point is that he was selected by his peers. So
it's the recognition side of it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And so, you know, I was able to talk to him, and he was more than happy to accept this. And so I'm so happy for him.
Bless me.
That was my internet, guys. That was nothing else.
Yeah.
May Crawford be with you, Chad.
Yeah, may Crawford be with me.
And also
and with you.
He is someone who we've always kind of just, you know, rooted for, and now he's there with Panic. So hopefully he's...
And also someone whose bat we've also chronically undersold. So credit to him for really being an all-star, like a well-rounded all-star player in every area of the game this year, because we have not always we've always seen him as kind of the light-hitting, incredible defensive shortstop. And I take back anything I ever said about light-hitting right now.
Well, no, I mean, I asked him about his splits between left and righties, and, you know, 3 years ago, of course, he hit righties better, but the last 2 years, he's hit lefties better, and I asked him about that, and he said he's been working on that pretty hardcore, so now he feels just as comfortable against lefties as he does against righties. He wouldn't admit that he feels more comfortable against lefties, but the fact of the matter remains that he loves lefties, so good for him.
And don't we all?
Yes.
But I mean, it shows. When you spend a lot of time trying to get familiar with how you're going to see something, you see more lefties, you get more used to seeing the ball approach from that side, because that's always what sort of the idea of what throws you off is seeing the ball come from a different direction.
I'll say this as kind of an aside to the Crawford, Chad, your interview with him, my absolute favorite part was he said it. He can go 4-for-4. He can go 0-for-4. At the end of the day, he's going to go home to his family, and those people are going to love him no matter what he does. And that really got me. And that really told me that he's centered, and he understands his place in the game.
Staying grounded. Yeah.
Right. And he totally, that was my absolute, if you have not listened to it, go click on the previous post before tonight's podcast that's on the website. It was a great interview with Crawford. That was literally my favorite part, because he's so right on. Those kids don't care what he does. When he goes home, he's the same thing. He's daddy. And I wouldn't be surprised if his turnaround the last 2 years coincided with having children.
It would make some sense. I mean, you kind of have to figure out how to work through a lot of things and grind yourself in a hurry, I would imagine. But Chad, of course, would know more about that than I would.
Well, it makes sense. And I made that point that, late in my playing career, my mid to late 30s, that's when I finally was – I played better because I didn't give a crap, basically. I thought more about going home, being safe, being healthy, being with my family. And when you don't think about it too much, you relax. And when you relax, things happen that are very good. And both Panic and Crawford agreed with that. And, of course, they're in their early to mid-20s. But
yeah,
that's the whole reason why they are where they are.
Absolutely.
These guys don't need to wait till the mid or late 30s to figure that out. They've figure it out now, so it's fantastic. And it was really cool to hear that from both of the guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. Eric, who have you got for a favorite guy?
Well, I'm going to bring up Josh Osich, because before 2 weeks ago, I had never heard of Josh Osich.
Yeah. I had.
Osich.
I admit.
I had no idea. I'm not a minors guy. I don't dig into the minors, and I fully admit it. Yeah. I've got
one of my best friends covers the California League, so I had an unfair advantage. But I've definitely heard about Josh.
That makes sense. She totally would have told you about that. It's funny because I have a couple of guys like Cove Chatter. He totally covers the minors and stuff, and I'd never heard of Osich. I had no idea who he was, and this guy has come in. He's thrown 5 1/3 innings. He's had 6 appearances, and he hasn't let up a hit yet.
And he's constantly inheriting runners too. Bochy is constantly throwing him in where there's like one or two people on base, and it's like, well, figure it out, Rook.
And he throws fire. He's like the bizarro Barry Zito. Because he's got, a little bit of the hair going. He bounces on in like, I'm just happy to be here. And then boom, boom, he can throw it up there at 96 like it's nothing. I mean, in 5 1/3 innings, he's only walked 2 guys. Those are the only base runners he's allowed. He hasn't hit a guy. He hasn't given up a hit yet. He's faced 18 batters. He's walked 2 guys. That's it. That's all the guy's done. Nobody's done a thing off him. He's my new favorite guy because forget the fact that I haven't even heard him. He is showing that the youth movement in the bullpen is a possibility.
He might even be showing that it's necessary in a way.
Oh, I think it is. And I think that we're watching the entire Giants bullpen change before our eyes, much like we saw the entire infield change over the course of 2010, 2011, 2012.
Yes.
I have a feeling that that's what we're seeing with the bullpen right now. I think with Canto stepping up, Javi's going to pitch till he's 80. With Hunter Strickland stepping up, with Osich stepping up, I have no idea who the closer is going to be next year. I have no idea who the closer is going to be at the end of the year, honestly, because Casilla has some rough outings as much as I love the guy. But Osich, he's really impressed me. I never heard of him, and I was really happy to see him come in. Take your time, Jeremy Affeldt. If you don't feel up to coming back
we would like to see Jeremy Affeldt, okay. Jeremy Affeldt come back. But if 2014 Jeremy Affeldt's coming back, well, take your time, man. Enjoy your kids.
Yeah. Burgers. It's okay.
Okay, absolutely. Maybe not. Maybe not that. I don't like blood, you guys.
He's 36. Jeremy's 36. Casilla's 34. Romo's 32, although I think Romo's done for a different reason, and we'll get into that next week. Let's see. So you take the youth movement with Strickland at 26, Osich at 26. Kontos is kind of leading the youth movement. He's 30. God, that's still young to me.
I know, right?
I try not to think about it. But I definitely agree, though, that we're watching. It's like the old the brass ring in wrestling, right? Like when you get the opportunity, if you reach up and you take it, good things will happen.
Yes,
that's I think more true in baseball, really. But we're really seeing it with this bullpen, where it's like, look, it's not necessary. Like it's the core four's job to lose, but if they do, those guys are right there making the case every single day for why they should be up. So, I mean,
they earned it. If they, if the core four loses it, these young guys earned it. They
absolutely,
right. They absolutely
Osich,
grabbed it. That's why
Osich has been outstanding.
He's my new favorite
Strickland's
guy.
Been good. Kanto's been outstanding. Broadway's been good. Osich deserves it. Osich is an excellent choice for new favorite guy this week. I like it.
Yeah. It's hard to say his name.
So for my new favorite guy, I'm going back to an old favorite guy who is still a new favorite guy to most of us. It's got to be like Matt Duffy, right? Like in the 15 run game, he goes 4 for 6. And we have a running joke because Jen Ramos, who I was mentioning, who covers the Cali League, has a habit of, like, for a while, Jen was really just high on Matt Duffy. And everybody was kind of like, oh, okay, I mean, he's, you know, he's an infielder. No, he's going to be good. And now every time he does anything, everybody goes, you were right about Matt Duffy. And so for 4 straight hits during that game, I was just telling Jen, you were right about Matt Duffy, with like ones and exclamation points. And so there's just like this string of those just like sitting on her phone. It was great. But Matt Duffy has been a lot of fun to watch, and it just seems like he's just getting better all the time. Every time you think, okay, well, he's starting to cool off a little bit, and he's just 4 hits. He's starting to kind of finally kind of wind out, clutch walk. He's starting to sort of, you know, and just it's not happening. He's having occasional slumps, but he's not cooling off per se. Like, he's not staying cold. And it's if we do in fact get past the Dodgers and get into the playoffs, you'll pretty much be able to point at this season, and barring a big midseason buy or trade, you're going to look at it and go, Matt Duffy's why we're here. Because nowhere on the field have we made an upgrade as sharp as potentially bullpen, but right now, third base.
Right.
So, and that's been big.
Well, it's funny. We see the stats of Panda versus Duffy, and they're starting to get old to me, because the farther we get in the season, the less I think about, you know, Pablo Sandoval anymore. I could give a shit what he's doing right now in Boston. That's really where I'm at, and it's because of Matt Duffy.
And it is absolutely because of Matt Duffy. If we were still, if we were still running Casey McGee out there every single day, besides the fact that the fans would be in open revolt, it's also that. People would still be talking about, like, oh man, all right, I almost want Panda back now. Like, because you compare those stats, and like, Panda actually looks like a decent improvement. But you look at the way that Duffy's playing right now, and it's like, yeah, who? I remember we had a guy, I don't know, like, I don't know, blue bubbles sometimes and stuff. And you know, like, I'm never really going to forget Pablo, but I don't think about missing him this year.
Right.
I agree. That's a really interesting, but a really good benchmark too. That's a really good point.
Open revolt. I'm picturing pitchforks at the ballpark right now.
Oh man, yeah. Well, it's made of tiny baseball bats. So, I always have a couple of honorary mentions. I would like to honorarily mention Joe Panic, who hit a ball so hard that somebody actually leapt into the cove in order to try and get it.
Oh my god!
It looked so cold. I don't know how you do that.
I thought it was a girl at first. I feel bad.
It was tough to tell. We debated it here for like an inning until the person got out of the water. You couldn't tell if it was a guy or a girl.
Yeah, fair enough. But that was I.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think Ben just said we're blind.
No, I just I'm not even going to try and get into it. It is mostly the like anyway.
I don't get it. It's a $9 baseball. Why would you want to jump into a cove?
It's an impulse decision. Those are not always the smartest ones.
Yeah, pretty much.
That guy was visiting the Apple Store the next day.
I was gonna say it was also not a particularly good dive, but it was a heartfelt one, and we respect that.
The way his foot caught, that just made.
I was just like, oh no, okay, oh, and you got it. Good. At least it was worth it. I guess. It's compared to how much you'll spend on replacing your phone. With that said, honorary mention number one, definitely Joe Panic. And honorary mention number two is Ice Cube. All right, so let's pick some guys to hate. Not Ice Cube. Ice Cube is now hereby exempt from hating. I'm just going to default to Yasiel Puig. I just kind of hate that guy. You know? Like, is there really ever a bad time to hate Yasiel Puig?
No.
No. Nope. Apparently not even for the Dodgers clubhouse. Apparently even the Dodgers clubhouse does not like Yasiel Puig. Yeah. So no. And currently I think that the mood is Puig is still playing well enough that he's too important not to keep around, but you wonder how long that clash can last before somebody's got to part ways. And
yeah, he's like that guy in high school. We were like, you know, he's a douche.
I can't even stand you.
I don't.
Why do you hit 350? You know,
but he gets us beer. You know, it's like there's just something about him that
because he's got a fully grown beard already.
Yeah, it's like right. All right, we got to keep him around. He's not a nerd, but he's just a goof, and like I don't know what, but yeah.
In my defense, I was totally a nerd.
But yeah,
I did. I definitely not only did I not have a fully grown beard, I still don't. And I'm 31. But anyway.
Are you still carded, Ben?
Yes, actually, that does happen sometimes when I shave.
Well, that's a good thing.
Not that there's much to shave, but when it's there, at least it looks like I'm at least like over 21.
No, I have no idea why that's a good thing. But
that's
how it is.
The older you get, there you go. In theory.
Yeah, the older you get, the more happy you are to get carded, man. Like, I get carded once, like, every 2 months, and I'm like, really? Yeah, here, take my card. I was born in the 70s, but I, you know, please take my card.
My older brother got carded when we were out for dinner when I was visiting him over in DC, and he just got like really excited. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. When you're like 21 to 25, you're like, what the hell, man? I'm old enough. And then once you hit about 34, 35, you're like, yeah, okay, yeah, card me. Yeah, yeah. Tell me I look young.
Yeah.
The gray,
yeah,
the gray hair belies
me.
You
really do need to see this. Yeah, here.
Yeah. I appreciate it. I don't look any different, but yeah, yeah.
Either of you got somebody to hate?
Yeah, I'm going to hate on Chris Berman just because it's easy again. Just like
back.
Oh, my God. You didn't even watch it tonight.
No, I didn't. No.
he's the worst. He's the absolute worst. I tweeted it tonight. I'm going to start a GoFundMe account so that we can send me to the All-Star game next year so I can get a press pass and just jump Chris Berman, gag him, and throw him in a closet so he misses the broadcast. Because –
it's a really specific GoFundMe. I don't know. It's nice to have a goal.
Yeah.
I think I'd raise $1 million.
Help me gag Chris Berman.
Yeah, he's so like hard to listen to. And that one's all the way to Lexington, Kentucky. Oh, and that one's to Columbus. His shtick
One into Lake Erie.
The thing that bothers me most is the guy doesn't cover baseball all year long. Why the hell does he have to drag him out one night a year? Who the hell cares? Nobody cares what he has to say.
Because Costas isn't going to yell, bark.
No, he's not. He's going to insult Pedro Strop's family, but that's another story.
No.
Moving on.
I thought they were fine when it was Ravitch and even Schilling. I can't believe I'm saying this. When it was Ravitch, Schilling,
Schilling's calling a thing and providing insight, I don't want to punch him. And that's okay. That is some of the time.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I could have hated Harold Reynolds here because the guy trends on Twitter every Saturday night. Yeah. I mean, he's horrible. But Berman is done. The guy needs to be off the home run derby. He's part of the reason I didn't tune in the last 6 mm-hmm. years. And if it wasn't for the change this year, I probably wouldn't have tuned in this year. And Berman was at least tolerable because they cut away from him for half of it. But I'm going to always hate on Chris Berman when he does baseball.
When he does, you know, especially the derby.
Yeah,
especially the derby.
It's fine for football. But when he does baseball, I can't stand him. So, I don't really hate him, but I hate him.
I always like the inevitable joke that comes up of somebody hitting a foul pop behind them and Berman just yelling, front. And I just wish, but nobody foul pops backwards in the home run derby.
No.
And I don't know if you saw him tonight, but he looks like Ben Franklin right now. So somebody hand that guy a kite and a key.
I wasn't ready for that. Hold on. Chad, do you feel like hating anybody? Are you full of love tonight?
I am full of love.
That's why I hated Berman, because I couldn't think of anybody else.
Yeah, right. I defaulted to Yasiel Puig. It's been kind of a slow week for hate. That's a good week, right?
It is.
In order to find people to hate, we have to resort to like TV hosts or sports hosts we see like once a year and like Dodgers. Like the Dodgers are like they're like backup hate if we're not playing them in a given week. It's like, I don't know who else to hate. I'm opting for a Dodger. And we even admitted we liked one. Jock Peterson was great this week.
Oh, yeah. I like him.
Joc Pederson is what is one of those guys that I'm just like, I'm going to have to hate you by default, and that's going to be about it until you do something actually stupid. So,
but
right.
Palo Alto.
I know.
Yes, he's a big kid.
He'll understand. That's the worst part. Like, you'll get it. Damn it.
If there's anyone out there that wants to start the GoFundMe account so we have a full year to do it, go right ahead. You know, just slap my name on it. I'm totally cool with that.
Oh, boy. Speaking of leading into next year, why don't we go ahead and wind out this year by talking about why we're going to win it all? Because as we all know, our favorite thing to do is come up with reasons why we'll win it all. So,
Chad, since you didn't hate on
I was
going to
say,
why
yeah,
don't you tell us?
You're so full of love. You've got to have some optimism in there, so too. Bring it on us.
So full of love.
Man, that's good whiskey. Go on.
No. Brandon Crawford was in a very lovable attitude. And of course, you know, the double play combination with him and Joe Panic, that's what's going to take them to the next
outstanding
level.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
So it's that go defense.
Yeah.
Brandon Crawford defense porn sexed.
Debt like, defense. I mean, with the D's.
With, well, yeah. Duh. There's no other way you spell that.
No.
Duh. And then you put though at the end. So dead defense, though.
He's got such a cannon. It's so
oh,
fun
yeah. They're so much fun to watch. And Panic, too, like, was really a revelation when he got called up and suddenly started doing most of the same things that Crawford does on the other side of the field. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, ooh, nothing's getting through the middle. Okay.
You mentioned that Duffy used to be a shortstop second baseman. Panic also used to be a shortstop.
True.
So if you think about the infield for the Giants right now, it's shortstop, and then Buster or Belt.
Yeah.
Which, and Buster was a shortstop.
Yep.
Right.
Although in a very different positions way and much longer. Right. Well, I mean, Buster was regularly a shortstop
is the thing. He was.
So, I mean, shortstop was actually his pre-catcher natural position. But that was a longer time ago. Like, Duffy was a shortstop, like, you know, like 2 months ago. I mean, this is not the same thing.
Yeah, I like your shed. I totally agree. Panic and Crawford out the middle is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with my why we will win it all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to segue because the Dodgers can't – I mentioned it earlier. The Dodgers can't be winning teams, and the Giants own the Cardinals. So those are the teams that they need to climb over. And since the Dodgers can't beat winning teams and the Giants own the Cardinals, they've got a clear path to the World Series again.
Booyah.
Yeah, that's – I like it. I mean, we just have to not face a bunch of teams that are – we just can't beat losing teams is our problem.
Yeah.
But so we just got to have, like – if you look at the strength of schedule from here and on out, as long as ours is the toughest, we're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Can we not face the Marlins in the playoffs? Okay, we're good.
Okay, then we're going to be all right.
Great.
I'm actually going to go ahead and say it's because we got, like I said before, we got plenty of cylinders left. It's not that we're not firing on all cylinders. We're missing a bunch of pieces. Like half the engine block is being rebuilt, really. Nori Aoki is still out. We've got potentially a rejuvenated Tim Lincecum and or Tim Hudson to roll back into the side at some point soon. Jeremy Affeldt, if things in fact improve for Affeldt while he's out, could be back at some point in the near future. And a functioning Jeremy Affeldt is a very useful Jeremy Affeldt. So, I mean, we still haven't had the whole roster we expected, but it's not even like we've lost the whole roster to a point where we're not going to see them. They've all been sort of like tantalizingly going to be back soon for most of the year. Hunter Pence was going to be back soon, then got hurt again. Kane was going to be back soon, then had a setback. Aoki was going to be back soon and probably, in fact, is going to be back soon. So, I mean, it's been one of those weird, like, it's not like one of those years where somebody's just out for the season, knock on more wood. I'm just knocking on wood here. There's a whole bunch of, like, here is your depth just waiting around the corner. And if we can just kind of put it all together for a little bit and make it all work, we're going to be unstoppable, probably long enough to at least catch up to the Dodgers.
I think so.
I hope so. I'll take it.
Yeah, I'm not backing off. My Giants are going to win the division. So I'm right there with you.
At this point now, you're just like, find a way.
Yeah.
Must have.
You watch them. They click on all cylinders some days, and this is not the time to get into it because we're wrapping up and maybe next week. But if Pagan can sit his ass down for a while and the outfield can be Aoki, Blanco, and Pence, I'm pretty confident this team can, you know, really just rip off some consistent wins.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm like I said, this isn't the time to – yeah, I don't want to get into the Angel. We'll get into the Angel next week because right. we'll see a few games and we'll know how closer – because Aoki is supposed to be back. They said 2 weeks from Friday. The night you were there, Chad, I believe, is that they said that Aoki will yep. be back in 2 weeks. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him back a little bit sooner than that. He's already out in the field running around, throwing the ball and things like that.
Yeah,
so.
That's 2 weeks with no rehab. But that's what they,
right. know,
they did with Hunter, so it's all good.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's plenty about what's going on right now, considering that we're in the middle of a break. I almost tried to repeat my Chris Berman impression and decided I didn't want to drive Eric completely off of our podcast forever. So now actually seems like a wise time to close it in that case. We, of course, are always easy to find. We're always tweeting during Giants games or just saying whatever dumb things come to our mind when we're not in Giants games. I'm certainly guilty of that one. And we've always got a lot going on. You know, Eric's always writing blogs on his own site. Chad's always writing blogs on ours. I'm really bad at writing blogs on ours. Sorry, but there's always a lot going on with us. You can always check us out at torturecast.com, or you can always follow us on Facebook at the Torturecast. Check out our Twitter at Torturecast, or you can even find us on YouTube, where we'll post a lot of the shorter interviews that we do by video. Otherwise, you can always catch us right here. Torturecast.com is going to have anything we do with bonusodes, with interviews, with our regular episodes, and whatever other crazy stuff we dream up, because we've always got a couple of neat things to kind of try out and bring you guys. If you've got ideas for us too, tweet at us. Let us know what you're interested in hearing, interested in seeing, or interested in having us ask some of the players, and we'll try and sneak in another question about catcher face somewhere down the line. Otherwise, you can always find us individually. Chad is at ChadK21. I'm at Fried Duck. You can find Eric at 2OutHits. That's the number 2. And of course, the absent but always well-remembered Willie Dills. We love you, Willie. Is at Willie Dills. So if you want to, you know, if you have some ideas for what you want to see on the show, get in touch with us. Otherwise, we'll go ahead and see you next time. A boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torturecast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at Torturecast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.